Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Rees.
And this is Core Intuition. It's going to be a busy week. Well, Manton, my plans have not changed. I'm not gearing up to go fly out to San Jose, but I know many people are, so I'm excited on behalf of you and all of our listeners who are going to be meeting up, having a great time without me. Every time about this year, I usually start to regret that we didn't make any t-shirts, and I still haven't shipped my app. And this year, I guess I get to add to the list of regrets that I'm not going. But you have a pretty exciting week planned. You're going to be giving us... this is the part where I make you freak out. You're going to be giving a talk. You're going to be...
Wait, what? Oh, I guess I should prepare for that.
You're going to be hosting a sort of informal meetup for microblogging aficionados.
Mm-hmm.
And you are going to be fulfilling all the promises for every feature you ever requested, Your book's going to be done. And
no.
You're also going to have a JSON feed version 2 ready to go. And it's going to be called standard JSON. And
oh,
it's
no.
going to be, you've got just a
Comment
few things
JSON.
To wrap up in the next 3 weeks or so.
Not all of those things will be done. Some of those I don't want to do, in fact, but it is, it's going to be a busy week, and it's not even really a week. I'm only there until Wednesday. So I think it's going to be fun. I'm glad I'm going out, but there's some stress and some things to do. Like you said, I'm giving a talk Tuesday morning at CocoConf. I think that's going to be really fun. And then kind of right after that, we're going to do a meetup, I think around, 12:30, maybe, like kind of a lunchtime meetup for anyone who's interested in micro.blog, either if you're back the Kickstarter and you've tried it out, or if you're just interested and curious. And I'll bring some stickers for people and hopefully be able to give some invites out if people want to try it. So that's going to be neat. I think that's kind of a new thing.
Sounds exciting. Where do people go if they want to find out more about that?
I don't know. Well, so we have a, I don't know how to read it on the air, but we have a, like a Google form kind of thing that you can fill out to show your interest. And then when we have a venue and kind of we've decided what to do, we'll send an email there. The best thing is probably to look on probably on Twitter. You can find a link under
my
account.
How about in the show notes? We'll put it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes. That's a, this podcasting thing. I don't know.
Revolutionary new idea.
Yeah. We'll put it in the show notes.
There would be a show and there would be notes.
Any listener, of course, is welcome. Anybody who's interested in micro.blog or microblogging in general, or you just want to say hi, welcome to show up, and it'd be good to meet people.
Cool.
I hope to run into listeners throughout the week as well, although I'm not going to be there that long. So short week.
That's probably good. I mean, what always happens to me is, I usually, when I do go, I usually actually book from Saturday to Friday, and it ends mm-hmm. up being like Saturday into Sunday is like my chill out, easing
right.
into this week of total insanity.
Yeah.
And then like Sunday night, it starts getting crazy already. Like Sunday night, it's like, whoa, there's people to see. And if you're going to the conference, you start checking in and getting your badge on Sunday, it starts feeling real. And there's usually at least one sort of like substantial meet up on Sunday night, and then it's like Monday comes around and you're like, oh, keynote excitement, and then you're like, seriously, has it only been one day?
Right.
So I think by Wednesday you're gonna feel pretty you will have seen a lot of the world by Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it'll be just right. I used to, back in the old days, I would go Sunday to Saturday. It's a full week. I was there full day every day, for the conference. And then I've slowly started backing off from that. Like even when I had a conference ticket, I would start leaving like Friday afternoon. And traditionally in the old days, there wasn't really that much going on Friday afternoon anyway. And then I slowly changed that to Thursday. And Wednesday is the earliest I've ever left. I guess if I keep this up, eventually I'll just be flying out for like an hour and then turning around and leaving, waving to people at the airport. I think this will be just right. I'm actually arriving Saturday, which I don't usually do because there was like a too good to be true hotel deal if I arrived on Saturday. And so I'm going to do the same kind of thing you talked about, like, you know, get into things the first day, see San Francisco, probably catch up on some work and different things before the conference starts. And then, you know, then that'll be that.
Yeah. Yep. So, do you have any, I've sort of actively not bothered quote unquote predicting or, even hoping much for what's going to happen. So I'm really set up well now to just sort of take it as it comes and be like, okay, well, I guess that's what we get. But have you been thinking at all about that? Do you have any sense of, do you think you know what's going to happen, or do you care what happens? Or is it kind of more like now you're so steeped in the microblog stuff, it's more about just like, imagine it to some extent, you might not even care as much about what's happening on Mac and iOS, at least in this moment. I know you care in the long run, but
yeah, to be honest, I think that's right. I think I don't care that much. Yeah. Right. And of course we say that, and then I might be Sherlocked somehow, and then Apple decides to build a new social network or have blogging as part of iTunes or something. Who knows, you know, what crazy thing they're going to come up with. So I may be shocked and surprised and start caring quite a bit depending on what they announce, but I don't think anything like that will happen. And I don't think a lot of things that they talk about will be relevant to me. We've talked, you know, off and on about Siri. I think that that's a big area that they need to improve. And I think they will, in terms of developer APIs and things that Siri can be extended to do. And there may be, you know, there may be other things that kind of indirectly affect what I'm working on. Certainly new APIs, I'll look at all that stuff. But there's a lot, there's a whole class of things like Swift 4 doesn't really affect me. And there's a whole class of things that I could kind of leave, you know, take it or leave it really. And so I'm excited. I'm sure when the keynote happens, I'll be, you know, clapping and cheering and, you know, just like always. But I have very few expectations going into this year.
That's good. Probably. I mean, I feel kind of similar. It's like, I guess I'm just ready to be psyched about something. As we always say every year,
impress us,
I'm finally ready to be psyched, you know, but as I always say every year, I guess if I have one thing that I'm anticipating more than anything, it's the developer tools. And, you know, we get a big, it just feels like deja vu now from last year, but we get a big sneak peek of what's going to happen with Swift because it's developed largely out in the open. Maybe entirely out in the open. I don't know to what extent there might be like little secret like sidetracks going on, but I suspect it's either entirely or massively out in the open. So like, you know, I just read the other day like what to expect in Swift 4 roundup, and a lot of that stuff's not going to be a surprise to anybody. But I'm always excited to see what happens with, you know, the beloved / hated Xcode IDE. And one thing that's nice about WWDC, if you like changes and improvements to developer tools, I don't think there's ever been I don't know, maybe I'm not thinking back far enough, but at least in recent memory, there has never been a WWDC where there's not like a dramatic developer tools update. Mm-hmm. Or at least, you know, something that gets a round of applause from the audience. And then maybe it's like an hour later, people are like, what was I clapping for? This isn't worth it.
You're right. It's kind of a simple thing Apple can do. And of course, I say simple, but like a lot of hard work goes into the developer tools. And some of the problems are extremely hard to solve. But it's kind of a simple, straightforward way they can make developers happy. You know, it's like there's a new feature in Xcode and it makes your life better, it makes you more productive. And it is a developer conference. Let's not forget. I mean, we get kind of sidetracked with the keynote, which is often about, you know, new version of, you know, iOS and new features and user type features. And that's great, but it is a developer conference. And I agree with you. There certainly will be something on the tool side that maybe complements, you know, things from the language side with Swift 4.
Yeah.
So another thing, as I was thinking about iOS features and what to expect from WWDC, there's this great concept video at Mac Stories. Federico Vitici, who uses the iPad all the time, and he collaborated on this with Sam Beckett for the video portion. And it's like this, you know, hopes and dreams for iOS 11 specifically for the iPad. So more power user features, drag and drop between apps, a whole Finder for better file management. And I really loved this. And I think that I don't know if we're going to see these features exactly, but I feel like it's time to show iPad users something. You know, we've had the iPad Pro for a year and a half or something like that. It's time to bring some more features to the iPad so that the people that are living in the iPad a lot, using it a lot, can just be more productive, get more work done.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, this is, Federico is famous for being pretty much all in on iOS, and I think in the iPad in particular, because he does so much that is sort of in that middle ground where a lot of us would say, oh, you have to have a Mac for that. You have to use a PC. You can't use a tablet for that. And boy, Federico has just always been amazing me/ I'm like, are you crazy? Maybe it's a little bit of both for Federico, or maybe it's a little bit of both for me. But the funny thing is I'm like this polar opposite when it comes to using iOS as a sort of pro machine. I have a couple iPads. They've gotten quite old now. They're like my kids basically play things. And I have not actively used iOS, or not iOS, but iPad, iOS on an iPad in years. And even when I did use it, it was like I wasn't really getting it, right? And I think there's a chance if I went back into it and sort of tried to follow Federico's lead and the lead of others who are doing stuff like him, I would find more things to enjoy. But the funny thing is, I was looking through this concept video and it's so well done that I had to like ask myself, wait a minute, is that something, is the thing that they're showing me now something that's already in iOS and it's, they're showing like a tweak to it? Or right. I kind of knew they didn't have some of these things. Like they showed off like this idea of a shelf, but the shelf that they show just looks a lot like something Apple would do. And that's a credit to the design work that's going into this. But it's also kind of funny that I was looking at it and thinking like, I don't know, or these drag and drop things, like, oh yeah, that looks like something you can probably do on iOS. And I'm just kind of thinking like, no.
Yeah, it's very well produced. I mean, it's like, yeah, pixel perfect, just really, just there's the design of it, just like the UI design, which is great. And then the fact that everything is animated, showing, I mean, it's very, very well done. They've just done a really great job on this.
Yeah, so the funny thing is, you know, question being like, how much of this will we see at WWDC? None, zero, unless it was something that Apple was already working on starting a year ago. So, right. But what's funny is, what we should probably be on the lookout for is when Federico makes these videos, we should probably be on the lookout for whether the features show up the following year.
Yeah.
So it's like 2010 video. Sorry, 2010. What universe am I in? 2000. The 2000.
The iOS 10 concept video. Is any of that going to make it into iOS 11? Because yeah, I went back and I looked at some of that, and I don't think any of his ideas, for the most part, made it into the current version of iOS. Simply because it just didn't have a lot of changes for the iPad.
Right. Right. Yeah, so it could be something where they got some of those ideas. And I mean, it's also sort of also boils down to, I don't want to disparage anybody at Apple, but there can be a way where you kind of have your own process for deciding how to evolve a system and how to add features. And I don't think anybody who was like, you know, good at their job would shy away from looking at something like Federico's video, but it might just kind of be like a bias towards, you know, following their own process. And, and in that sense, like I'm trying to phrase that in a way that doesn't like insult them for doing it that way, but it is possible, I think, for a creative team to have a process that works so well for them in general that even if there are good ideas that are not being discovered by that process, like they would be doing a disservice to themselves to just allow themselves to jump around the internet and like look for inspiration from, you know, concept videos left and right. Like it's easy from the outside to say like, well, of course they should go just look at everything that Federico has said to do and just do that. But that sort of requires suspending your whole internal process for how to evolve and iterate and make these decisions. They're not going to just like go copy paste out of this, obviously, but it's the kind of thing where I would hope if there was something that had slipped through the cracks of their design process and seeing a concept video like this made them think, oh my gosh, like how did we miss that? Then hopefully that would be the kind of thing where they would find a way to start like introducing that kind of idea. But you know, I do think that there are things that any creative team is working on, and there will be fruit of that work if they're a talented team. And you know, the folks at Apple are talented. There will be fruit of that work that is going to be completely out of you know, left field from anything that anybody has imagined. And if they were just going around like looking at concept videos and implementing what they saw, then of course none of that stuff would ever happen.
Right. And there's something about, you know, you can do a mock-up of something, but when you actually live with it and use it, maybe it just doesn't work. Like the concept video is very impressive because it looks like they're using these features and dragging things around and, you know, using the shelf and the finder and all this kind of stuff. But like when it comes to building a prototype for it, it may not work that well. You know, and that's how design is. You know, you do something on a whiteboard, but when you actually code it in iOS, maybe it doesn't work. That's fine.
Yep.
So they can draw inspiration from this, but there's no guarantee they could copy it and it'll be exactly right. But there is something, possibly things behind these features that they need to pay attention to. Because like you said, Federico, he didn't just dream these features up because he thought it would be cool. He has specific problems that he's running into with iOS using it all day long that he wants solved. And so it's the same kind of thing when a customer sends you an email and says, I really wish Mars that it did this, and why don't you add a button here and then there? Like, maybe that feature request, like where that button is a bad idea, but there's something behind the feature request
where
he wants something solved. And so I think there's the same thing throughout this. Even if they don't copy it, there's something to these. I mean, the Finder, I think, is a great example. I mean, Apple has resisted doing this. They want apps to be apps, and they want to hide the complexity of the file system from the user. And I get that, but like sometimes you just need the file system. Like sometimes you need to make folders and drag things around. And they've admitted that, because if you look at the iCloud Drive app, like it is going and turning into the Finder. Like if it keeps going down this road, iCloud Drive will be the Finder. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like sometimes I think you do need folders and you need to drag files around.
Yeah, well, I think that's an example of, you know, the famous sort of like simplification of how Apple design often works, which is to go too far and then pull backward.
Right.
To sort of find that balance point. And, you know, the one of the famous ones is like OS X with its kind of like over the top pinstripe design, lickability, you know, all the shiny buttons. And it's funny now looking at my Mac OS 12, what, 10.12, sorry, UI, and it's like super matte, and there's these little like matte red, yellow, green buttons. Nothing is lickable. There's no pinstripes. If anything, it looks like closer probably to like the grayness of Windows 98 or something.
I thought you were going to say like the original Mac.
But well, no, maybe. Because even that, the original Mac was not gray. It was black and white. And so it's like this kind of interesting, you know, for many years in the original Mac, it was like, we have white because Mac displays are so good that you can see white and it doesn't just look gray. And it's kind of funny, like in some ways, the design has just got, I think it's probably reflects the fact that the design has become far more just kind of like, well, it went through a long period where it was like being splashy in your design was like a differentiation. And now it seems like it's sort of back to being like its point is to get out of the way.
Right.
And so I like that. But it took Apple. Like Apple, I think there's some truth to the fact that Apple couldn't like iterate its way to from what it had like in the Mac OS 9 days to what we have now. Although I don't know, I could see it happening, but it's one of those things where it's like to find the balance, sometimes it's easier to go find the other end of the spectrum first.
Right. Yeah. You don't know where the line is until you've crossed it. And then
you can work
your way back.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we're talking and I'm thinking about this video and I'm starting to get a little excited actually, because I sometimes forget that Apple has been working for a year and a lot of cases for features that didn't ship last year, longer than a year, on the operating system. You know, macOS and iOS get updates every year. And it's not just new APIs, it's end user features too. So I'm getting a little bit excited actually that maybe we'll see. I feel like there hasn't been a big splash. We haven't seen, and I don't want a redesign. I don't want something, you know, like shocking, like the iOS 7, you know, announcement all over again. I mean, not ready for that, but maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see. I'm getting excited for the keynote. Maybe we'll see something cool.
Well, here's the thing. It has to. I don't believe Apple is willing to put on WWDC without having things to say at the keynote, which they are fairly confident will be exciting and newsworthy. Right. So it's like we might be disappointed, but I don't think we're ever going to come into a WWDC, at least not while Apple is operating under its current, modus operandi. I don't think we will see a keynote where it's like, well, we just wanted to give you a little update on sales and let you know that we still love developers. And, if there's such a history to it now of exciting announcements, that it would be a sign of, I mean, it's kind of like they've taken some flack recently about things like the failure to update the Mac Pro. For years people were saying like just the fact that they're not updating the Mac Pro is a sign that they've lost their way, that they're not executing on hardware or whatever. And then Apple basically came out and said as much. They confirmed it. It was like, okay, that happened not because of some like scheduling mishap or because Apple, wasn't sure whether it was a good idea to have exciting things to say about Mac Pros. It was because they screwed up and they didn't have anything exciting to say. And I think that if we ever come across a WWDC where Apple doesn't have an exciting new pitch of some kind to make to developers, then it's going to be a failure. I mean, it will represent Apple being off the rails on some degree.
Right. Yeah. That would be a real sign that something is wrong. And, I think the fact that it took them forever to admit the Mac Pro problem, but the fact that that's out in the open now, like we know, like there's no chance of getting a Mac Pro WWDC. It's going to be a year from now, probably, or maybe a little less, but maybe a little bit longer. And there are a lot of things that are off the table for WWDC this year, which I think is probably good because it just like simplifies the rumors and the speculation a little bit.
Yeah, and that actually is good because it makes room for, like I said, if they have to have something exciting, well, those are things that it's kind of nice. We know, for instance, that new Mac Pro is coming and we don't need it to be announced at WWDC. It doesn't need to take up that excitement slot. So
yeah, exactly. And luckily, I think WWDC has moved toward being a software only event over the last few years. And I think that's a good move. Like for a while, they couldn't really make up their mind and they were using WWDC, especially as like Macworld went away, Macworld Expo, they were using WWDC for like these really big announcements, new iPhones, new Macs. And I'm glad now that it's mostly software and mostly about developers. They have other events where they can talk about the Mac hardware and the iPhone hardware. And it puts the focus back on developers, which is good.
I agree.
All right. So speaking of Mac stories, I just saw linked on Mac stories some big news that it follows up on something we talked about, I guess it was last year now. It's been quite a while, which is Dash, the app that was pulled from the App Store. There's a lot of drama and kind of controversy about it. I had a couple of blog posts about it that some people were skeptical about, but I really stood by them in terms of being very not happy with the way that Apple treated that situation. But anyway, Dash is back in the App Store. The developer has created a new personal account. The app is approved. it's back in the iOS App Store at least, and then the Mac version who will continue to sell just, you know, directly.
Yeah, I think this is very interesting. If only because after all the hoopla around that, you know, kicked out of the App Store, you just know there's no appeal for this. And then, like, all that, remember there was all that stuff with the, there was a public statement from Apple, and there was like the Capelli guy recorded a phone call, and it was just like, right. It was getting hairy. And then there was, of course, people jumping to his defense and people jumping to attack him. And I was like, saw this linked from Mac Stories, and I thought, wow, what a reversal. Like, what did he do? How did he convince Apple to completely go back on all of that extreme, like, hardline enforcement that they were talking about? Oh, he just made a new account.
Right.
That was easy. Like, well, probably could.
It's not clear if, you know, so he says, let's see what the exact phrasing, he says, I've made a personal developer account, which Apple accepted, and the review for Dash for iOS went through without any issues. It's not clear in that if he talked to Apple and they knew it was him and they're like, go for it, or if he just created an account, didn't talk to anybody, and Apple doesn't know any better because they've forgotten about it. And, you know, and in some ways it doesn't matter is so much which one of those is true, but it is kind of interesting that it, you know, it's, he kind of glossed over whether there was like a great coming together with Apple, and, you know, they either looked the other way or they said it was cool.
I sort of doubt that there was any collaboration with Apple.
I do too.
But there's a couple questions that this begs, because first of all, I think this sort of reflects how Apple is just this giant behemoth, and you can basically just, if you're not begging for their attention, then you just sneak by. And part of mm-hmm. the evidence for that is one of the things that motivated him to finally get another account on the App Store and put his own app back up for sale is, in spite of the fact that he made the app open source basically as a gesture to folks who wanted to keep running the app so they could have a opportunity to build it and install it themselves. And that's kind of perfect because the app is aimed at developers, so a lot of people would be comfortable in doing that. But then, like, I'm reading this other article that he linked to. It was from a few months ago, 100 Days Without the App Store. And he just talks about how many, like, fraudulent copies of Dash are now on the App Store.
Right.
And he says, this is despite the fact that I specifically chose a license, GPL3, that's incompatible with the App Store. So basically, not only did Apple not notice when he made a new account and submitted Dash, but they didn't notice when, like, four, maybe more other people made accounts and submitted Dash. Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't say, I don't think he said anything about whether he actually contacted Apple. That would be funny if after kicking him off the App Store, they, you know, I mean, they do have a duty to respond to his copyright infringement.
Right. Well, he certainly contacted them through that mechanism so that they could remove those apps that shouldn't have been there.
Yeah. Oh, did he? I'm glossing.
Oh, no. He did. In his blog post, he says that Apple had been very responsive in removing the apps.
Oh, good. Okay.
But essentially, he was getting tired. I mean, the apps kept popping up. And so it's like, now it's his job to police the App Store. And the other thing I'm really struck by is, so you said, like, fraudulent copies. That's the word you used. And I don't know if that's the word he used or not. But, like, rewind a little bit back to all this drama. People are accusing him of fraud. People were saying he was the fraudulent one. And now, because of the drama, because, in my opinion, Apple really mismanaged that situation, the fraud is even worse. And it's not him. It's other people copying his work. And so it just strikes me as, you know, I'm glad the app is back in the store, but the whole situation is a disaster. And I think until he put his app back in the store, you could make an argument, and I will, that the situation in terms of fraud and customers being deceived was much, much worse after Apple's action than before.
Yeah. Well, I got some bad news too. I shouldn't say bad news. I got some bad mojo, some bad prediction here. which is I will not be surprised if Dash is once again removed from the App Store. Because this feels to me like, and to be totally clear, I'm happy with this being back in the App Store. I think Apple should have come to an amenable agreement with the developer and that he should be able to be back in the App Store. However, this is admitting that there's a lot of things we don't know, but the information as it was portrayed, both on Apple's side and from Capelli's side, did not leave me thinking that Apple was like, we look forward to seeing you enroll on the App Store again.
Right.
You know? And so, like, I could just see, and I mean, I don't feel bad about us talking about it because this is out in the open. It's out, you know, it's on the developer's own website. It's on Mac Stories. It's being discussed. We're going to discuss it here. But I could just see this getting back to somebody like Phil Schiller.
Mm-hmm.
And him saying, how the hell did he make another account? You know, like that was, I could see him being like, either how the hell did he, or how the hell does he think that that's okay? Or cancel that account now. Yeah. You know, I could, a lot of like not very, not very balanced, not very like wanting to do, you know, like a generous thing for this developer, but more like, at least the way I read that whole situation, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of like, oh no, you don't, like, how dare you? Like, we've been through this once, and I don't want that to be the case, but I will not be surprised in the slightest if a week, a month, maybe it'll be after WWDC, we see another blog post talking about how this account too has been shut down.
So I don't think that's going to happen. You're right. It could happen. I think it's a very, very slim chance. And for two reasons. One, the timing of this plays in, it's not in Apple's favor because Apple is extremely busy right now. I don't think Phil Schiller has any time to manage the App Store this week or next week. They are preparing for the keynote and the announcements and the new stuff. Like, if someone points this out to Phil Schiller, I think he will ignore it. He just doesn't have time for this, is my opinion. But maybe a bigger thing than that is that I think that if you go back again, I think that Apple made a mistake, but they kind of, once the process was underway and the drama was happening, they kind of had to, they felt they had to dig in and like say, we're just going to, this is what we've decided and there's no conversation, right? It's over. And now, 6 months later, however long it's been, the fact that he created a separate account and it's in there, it kind of lets Apple just look the other way. Like, Apple can choose to pretend they just didn't see this happen. And then it's not Apple changing their opinion. It's not Apple admitting they were wrong, because I'll never do that. It's just Apple being busy and just looking the other way and not paying attention to this anymore. And so it doesn't like invalidate Apple's decision from last year. But they also don't need to like jump in and have a statement about it. So my thought is that this will stand and that Apple is, they're focused on other things. It's not a major issue in this Apple stand. It will stay in the store.
I think your reasoning makes a lot of sense too. I guess I'm just not sure. I mean, going back all the way to the beginning when this was banned, it's like it brings up so many questions about like, well, what does it mean to be banned from the App Store? Like,
right, that's true.
If one company is banned, well, if all of the people who are the owners of that company go and start a new company,
right,
and they join, it's like, is there even such a thing as a like to the person ban from the App Store? And there may be, I don't know, but it's a tricky problem, and I think it probably comes down to legal entities where there's really nothing Apple can do to stop another legal entity from, because they welcome the membership of legal entities, sort of like independent of individuals. I don't think there's anything that would stop, and because you don't even have to technically like let on that you own a company, right? You can just have the company be, it can just have its, there's this whole like industry of like kind of anonymizing ownership in companies. So I don't know. This is kind of like, it's kind of a problem that Apple can't probably quote unquote solve permanently. If they don't like you, they probably can't really keep you out of the App Store. But it's in one sense, though, I think it's kind of nice that if you can't tell, folks, I'm working around having to say his name. I think it's Bowden, but I can't remember. This is probably why this is why I kind of like that he signed up just under his own name, because it really makes it clear he's not trying to be particularly underhanded about it. He's like,
I agree.
Hi, Apple. Here I am.
It's me again.
The guy you called personally and told, you know, there's no way you can be in the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back and I want to be in the App Store. Okay. Yep. You're in the App Store. Okay. Your app is approved. And so as far as like one institution dealing with one person, well, they've had a transaction again now and it's been approving from Apple and, you know, this guy's in the App Store. So even though I sort of like predicted doom and gloom before, I'm starting to see how it would be possibly even worse for Apple to actually follow through on some action now.
Yeah.
Because it's like, wait a minute, you let him in again. You know, right. What is it?
Yeah. No, I think this is it. Yeah. As we've been talking, I've taken my like 1% chance they'll be involved down to like 0.5% chance. I think this is it. I think this will stand. There's not going to be any more drama, and that's how it should be. He's a good developer. Like the app is good. Mm-hmm. Let's just move on.
Yep. Sounds good. And I guess that's what we should do too, Manton. Let's just move on.
Sounds good. It's good talking to you. A little bit of shorter episode this week because, oh my gosh, we're super busy and WWC is coming up and all the other reasons. But don't forget about the jobs board, jobs.corrent.org. And of course, don't forget to send us email feedback if you have it, feedback@corrent.org or on Twitter @corrent.
And of course, chat.corrent.org can be an even better way to send feedback, especially if you want to discuss things with a group of other people who also listen to the show. So hope to see you there if you're not already there, and we'll catch up with y'all next week.
See ya.